Welcome to the Esports Business Network podcast. I'm your host, Trent Knox, the founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. This is EBN podcast number 37. Our guest is Corey Booker, the creative mind behind Arsenal. Corey grew up in Greenville, South Carolina. He's been playing video games since he was 5 years old. Finding inspiration through Nadeshot, he ventured to be a professional Call of Duty player. In this podcast, we discuss his journey of becoming a content creator, the process of building your audience, and what we can expect from Arsenal in the future. Enjoy.
This is the future. Evolution. This is the future.
Hey, y'all, it's Trent Knox back with another Esports Business Network podcast. Today, I'm joined by a very young entrepreneur killing the game in Call of Duty. Welcome to the show, Corey Arsenal Booker.
Hey, thank you for having me, man. I appreciate you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. We were talking a little bit before we got rolling and on live that Corey and I corresponded, met on Clubhouse, and Clubhouse has been a great platform to meet other entrepreneurs, both young and both seasoned in this industry. And I was actually, you know, really interested in meeting more young minds in the space, from how they look and look at the business of esports and content creation and different things like that. But before we jump into that, let's talk a little bit about the backstory. How did Arsenal become what it is today? When did you first get into gaming and esports?
Okay, so when I first got into gaming, just overall, little kid, my grandma was like my everything. Like, my grandma was Nintendo 64, Sega Genesis, and I was the only child, so they would keep me in the house. But I got into esports when I was 16. I was watching Call of Duty, the World Champs on the Xbox, like the main menu screen. And I started just doing a lot of research about it, like started looking at Nadeshot, Optic, and when the climb of Black Ops 2, when everything was kind of getting crazy. And I was just like, yeah, I want to do this. And so I was just doing a lot of research, watching a lot of YouTube videos. And I just eventually just started playing, and I got better. And I just started playing and competing. I went full throttle with competing, like going to my first tournament and stuff. And then it got to a point where I was like 18. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, I'm looking at this as a business. I want to be a brand. I see what Nadeshot does. I see what Optic does. I see what all of these other players are doing. I want to do something. And I want to do something that kind of speaks to me and speak to the community that I'm around. So that's when Arsenal came up, and it went through a different variations, but I'm happy where like the product is at right now.
Yeah, absolutely. And so how old are you now?
I just turned 23.
You're now 23. Actually, 23 is an interesting age. You know, it's one of those ages where you're, you know, everyone's kind of like looking at you, seeing what you're going to do in life. And, you know, they're kind of skeptical. Some people are skeptical. Some people are super optimistic for your future. Yeah. I remember being 23 and just thinking like, man, I know nothing, but I can see I'm going in the right direction. Yeah. And 23 was when I started to get into the game and esports, like side of business and stuff like that. But so was Call of Duty your first game that you ever played?
No, like, so, I had cousins who played like Gears, who played like Halo. I love FPS is like, especially on console. Cause we kind of were like scared away from like PC games. I didn't get into that until I was older, but, yeah, like it was mostly like FPS. Like, I watched a whole bunch of Halo. I watched a whole bunch of Gears, but yeah, when I finally got old enough to play, my mom bought me my first Xbox 360, and then I got to play all the Call of Duties. I went back and bought all of them and went through my own journey of them. But yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I remember the first time I actually saw Call of Duty was back in the day. Best Buy, all these places had more like functional hardware, like
test
things out. Yeah. And between the two games that I'd play would be like Call of Duty 2 or this polar bear bowling game. You know, and you would just like bowl, and the polar bear would hit the pins, and he was like in this in like a inner tube. It was really cool. It was a really funny game. But back in the day, man, it was way different. I mean, they're starting to bring back some of that stuff where you can test out video games in store, but not as much as it was in the past. It was like an in-store in-cap thing, and it was fun. I'm sure you got to see the last of those days too. So you're in Greenville, South Carolina, right?
Yeah, Greenville, South Carolina.
So a little backstory. I don't think I've ever mentioned this on this podcast. I do talk to some people about having lived in South Carolina.
Yeah.
But I lived in Irmo, South Carolina. I lived in Columbia technically, but I went to Irmo Middle School. For 7th grade. Yeah.
Okay. That's pretty sick. I'm not gonna lie.
And then I moved back to Texas shortly after, but that was one of the first, I mean, playing Xbox Live and playing Halo 3 was like one of the best experiences I can remember playing online back then when you had the Xbox 360 and Xbox Live was just coming out. You had
brand new.
It's brand new. Yep. And other than that, like Warcraft 3, that was a big one for me as well.
That's sick.
Yeah, so I have a little bit of roots in South Carolina. My dad was stationed out there to be a drill sergeant.
And, That's pretty sick.
Yeah, and so I love the area. Is it the Palmetto State?
Yeah, the Palmetto State. It's a very, like, I tell everybody, like, I have lots of friends that are out of state. Some people in Texas, some people in California, they're like, bro, it seems so like slow down there. And I'm like, no. Once you get down here and you get, the people are amazing, man. I love it. The atmosphere is, it's like a good combination of like fast and slow because you have Charlotte, like where I stay at, you have Charlotte an hour away and you have Atlanta an hour away. So it's like, if you really want to go, like go to the cities and start networking and stuff like that. But where I'm living in Greenville, it's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. So yeah, it's pretty.
Yeah.
I love it, to be honest.
That area, the east coastline of the U.S. and the main state side, some of our international audience that hasn't been here is growing exponentially, especially Atlanta.
Yeah.
You know, and the DMV area is going crazy right now.
Yeah,
I just got a message about something that's a big project that's going to be happening. I can't wait to like announce what's going on with this project in the DMV area, but yeah. So what was it like growing up? You know, we talked a little bit before we got on air about, you know, playing traditional sports.
But yeah.
What was like playing games and video games like culturally where you grew up?
So I kind of grew up. It was pretty good. Honestly, a lot of my friends. So when I transitioned out of soccer, exposing to me that they play Call of Duty as well. I'd be like, bro, I'd be like, well, we can't practice today. Like, what were you going to do? They're like, well, let's get on the game. And I'm like, huh? Like, you guys play too? And they're like, yeah, bro, like, let me get your gamer tag. We'll play. And in the same way we would spend time playing and practicing and playing the game or playing in games, we would play the game. So it got to a point where that would become our pastime. So it was received pretty well. My mom was very supportive of it because it kept me out of trouble. I lived in a very rough neighborhood. So she was just like, long as you are not in trouble, just please do stuff to make like be safe. So it was pretty well received.
Yeah. Well, I can relate to that a little bit, especially with my parents. They always wanted me to stay busy.
Yeah.
And doing something, especially my dad. He's in the military, like I said earlier, but he was generally overseas. He's in Iraq, Afghanistan, overseas, you know, war or whatever, operation or something like that. And so, you know, when he'd come back, he'd be like, well, are you in football? Are you in, you know, a club? Are you doing something? But video gaming is very interesting, was one of the ways for he and I could stay kind of in contact
and
have some sort of relationship.
That's amazing, to be honest.
And that actually came through World of Warcraft. And,
wow. WoW is a legendary game. I have never played it, but Soda Poppin' came into my life very young, and I watched binge watch streams of WoW raids. It's crazy.
That's really cool that you mentioned that. So are you like, because my generation didn't have live video. I mean, I grew up kind of watching you stream and then later on Justin TV and some stuff like that. But that really wasn't gaming focused.
Yeah, yeah.
And so like you grew up with a little bit more of Twitch being present in like in the culture. I've never really asked anybody, like, did your friends also have Twitch accounts?
It's crazy because my friends, I would convince them to watch. Like I would convince them to make an account and we would just watch YouTube. And it's crazy because I tell people this, I basically grew up off of YouTube and Twitch. Like YouTube and Twitch, checking up on my like favorite content creators and watching them live was, it inspired me to do what I do now, honestly. Like it's crazy. So yeah, like I would influence me and my friends. I would just, hey man, like come watch the stream. And they're like, bro, what are you talking about? And I'm like, no, come here. Like, let me show you. Like, and they'd be like, bro, this dude is sick. It was like, watch him and just become like fans of the person and watch him grow. So yeah, dude, Twitch was super influential. Showing my mom, like, look, mom, like, look, they're playing a tournament. Look. And she's like, okay, I see the people. So yeah, it was super influential.
So what's interesting about that is, you know, while you were growing up, the people, I was already sort of in college and whatnot. And so it wasn't really like widely adopted yet as it is today, of course. Yeah. I mean, it's even more adopted than when you were growing up.
Crazily.
But, you know, the guys that were creating the content and making the blueprint, especially for like Call of Duty, like you brought up Nade Shot, FaZe Banks, you know, Syndicate, Ali A, like these guys, I'm gonna blank on it. Forgot the other guy's name. That's it's like D something.
But D-treats?
No. Oh man, Deltor? No, that's not right. I'm gonna have to look that up.
Okay.
No, those guys were creating the blueprint, so you kind of saw where the monetization comes from.
Yeah,
you kind of grew up with it, seeing it. That didn't exist when I was growing up. Because YouTube videos were more geared toward like there was like Rooster Teeth and their development of like Red versus Blue, like but it wasn't, it was still so entertainment focused.
Yeah, it was entertainment.
It wasn't as much focused on like gameplay and like, you know, sick scoring, and then live video just blew that out of the water.
Listen, like it's crazy to me because I sit back and I think about how without Twitch or without YouTube, my knowledge of even the business of esports would be so like lackluster. It would have been so hard because I would have had to been like, I'm not the best social person. I love people, but I'm more of an introverted person, but I love to just be inside and like learn and just soak up information about it. So I would only get to go to events maybe like once or twice a month, so that I would get to learn there. But YouTube and Twitch was like, I'm watching them actively be a business. Like, it was amazing.
Yeah. And just that experience of being able to see the growth as you're still young, when you can take a full advantage of it, where I talked to like some of the older generation that are like, yeah, we kind of built it. We were like involved and we're doing a lot of offline stuff, but we didn't get to see the success of the online.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't get to see the monetization through subs, through donations, through all of that stuff. There are some, it's like the outliers that, you know, created content. Most of them are like actual like content gameplay creators, not esports players. You have your few one-offs like Nothing, and you have your Fatalities. But those guys are very I guess they're like they're the example, not the rule, you know.
100%.
So you have like these successful folks that, you know, they built up their thing, but it was kind of, you know, maybe one in a million chance that you would be successful at esports. Yeah. And nowadays, it's completely different because there's way more teams to get signed to, way more money in the system, yeah. And if you have the ambition, way more opportunity to go out there and actually achieve your dreams.
100%.
Since we're coming around to it, I want to ask you. So, what did you establish first when you got to start building the brand of Arsenal? Did you establish YouTube or Instagram? Where did you start out?
So for Call of Duty, Twitter was my everything because I was a competitive player, and I was still building, like grinding and placing in tournaments and meeting pros and just creating and networking. So Twitter was my everything. I built around, like, I almost got like 5,000 followers on Twitter, and that's just everything that goes through, like, everything I do, that's my main hitter, like that it hits. So us Call of Duty kids, we stay on Twitter, we hawk it. So that was the first thing I learned, like, listen, create a Twitter, because if you need teammates, there's sites or there's play, like there's different accounts dedicated to your needs. So yeah, Twitter was my main one.
Gotcha. And so talk about that a little bit. How did you grow it to nearly 5,000 followers?
So it's multiple different ways, but it gets to a point where in Call of Duty, we're competing against each other, but also it gets to a point where you look at your competition and be like, wait a second, like, he's good, I'm good, let's see if we can make this team. So a lot of times it would just be like getting into Discord calls or joining eights are where you just play custom games and you just play against each other, get repetition. You just make friends. I would reach out to people. It was times where, especially when I was younger, like around 16, I would DM people, be like, hey bro, like, I would love to play with you, bro. Like, I would love to play this tournament with you, play with them. We win it. And we become friends off of just initial me DMing him. Like, so it was a mixture of things, but ultimately it was just taking a chance and trying to communicate with as many people as possible.
Yeah, it's so interesting because a lot of the people that grew up in my generation and maybe even older, I mean, technically you're still part of my generation, they were so apprehensive. I mean, even I was kind of like, well, talking to people online, a little weird. But then, you know, it's interesting because eventually online learning became like, and even now today, it's crazy with the pandemic and everything. Everything is online. Like, you barely even know the people that you're in class with.
100%. Right?
Back then, nobody, you know, other than text message or something like that, or, you know, rest in peace, Facebook, but rest in peace for sure, MySpace.
Yeah, MySpace. was it, though. I used to watch my cousin. And I didn't mean to cut you off, but
we were talking
about online learning. So in middle school, it's kind of crazy. In middle school, I went and talked to my mom. I was like, Mom, I want to be big in gaming. And she was like, Corey, she was like, okay, so like, what do you want to do? We sat down and I was like, Mom, listen, I was like, I don't want to go to school. And she was like, what do you mean? I was like, I want to take online classes so I can focus on being like playing competitive. And she was like, Corey, she was like, and I was making good grades, like straight A's and stuff. And she was just like, Corey, she was like, give it one more year and we'll see. And I gave it one more year. It was my eighth grade year, so I was in middle school. I was in seventh grade, so I was going into high school. So my freshman year, she was like, okay, you can do online class. So from freshman year to senior year, I did straight online classes. Okay, and it was the best experience of my life because I got to travel. I got to just full throttle go on in gaming, like, It was insane how many connections and stuff I made throughout those years.
Yeah. No, that's what's interesting is that that was more of a realistic option for you.
Yeah.
With the internet got faster, more programs available. My brother also did the same thing. He's a little bit younger than you. He just turned 20 Actually, it's interesting. Last night, he and I went to a local arcade and played some of the old arcade games and whatnot. And, you know, shout out to some of those guys.
That's dope.
But yeah, it's just like if I actually got to do some online classes later on when I was in college, and and some of those were the easiest things to do, but you have to the communication is different than in person, because you have to build relationships in a different way online than you do in person. And you know, having that extra amount of time to actually do the things you want to do in person rather than sit in a class and, you know, watch a teacher lecture or whatnot, like you talked about, you know, taking those online courses and being able to actually go to events and like do like real practical, you know, stuff is where I think like that's incredibly valuable versus the traditional learning system is just really, it's really not serving.
It's very outdated.
People. Yeah, it's very outdated. You know, there are programs out there like you know, the high school esports league, Generation Esports, and also I just had Rebecca. Oh, wrong name. I just had Taylor Gotch. On, and she's from eSpin.gg. And what they do is integrate into high schools and bring esports to the high schools and whatnot. And they just did a tournament in Spinadola, and yeah, it's really interesting how gaming and esports is finally coming to traditional education, but it's like it's been there for years. It's just been existing. So, so you built up your Twitter following, right? When did you start to create content on other platforms?
So that the main thing for me, I always wanted to test stuff. Like, I pay attention to everything. Like, I've been like a kind of a sponge. I always look at like the rap game and how like artists do stuff. I kind of look at gaming like you are your record label. Like, you're independent artist and you're trying to figure out what type of crowd you are. So the first thing I did was kind of crazy is I put out some merch, and I went through the whole process of getting a vendor and just doing that. Put out some merch and it sold out. And I was like, yo, what? Like, hold on. Because sometimes in Twitter, you know, you might get people who follow you, but you don't get people who support you. And and that's something that I always wanted to do. I wanted to have some type of support, like fan base or support base. And I put it out and my friends just went crazy. Like, they bought everything. And I was just like, yo, this is insane. And my friends would always tell me like, yo, you should do YouTube. You should do Twitch. Like, I'm excited for this. So like, I would do it. I didn't have the money to like do it on get a PC and stuff, but I would just do it on a PlayStation stream. I got my sub button on my PlayStation. Like, I would just do vlogs and stuff. Like, if I go to out of town. So right away, like maybe, it made my second year into competing, I started looking into content. So yeah.
So you started on Twitch, and then did you have an editor, or did you edit all the stuff yourself for YouTube?
Oh yeah, YouTube was my teacher. I tell everybody that I am like a product of YouTube. YouTube is my college, basically, because tutorials, everything. I even learned a little bit of graphics from YouTube, just because I look at everything like, I went to school for business, but I look at everything like, I want to learn it first before I try to go out and like look, tell someone like, I want this. I want to know how I can do it before I can outsource. So I just tried it all, like, and I was young, so I was like, let me try it. So yeah, I learned editing. I learned everything from YouTube. YouTube has got credit for all of that.
Interesting. You just mentioned that you went to school for business. Yeah. So you went to college?
Yeah, I went to community college.
Oh, okay, cool.
So I got a 2-year business, like entrepreneurship. And the reason why I did that is because I got a little older and I started looking at the in-person connections. those connections and how they navigate, how they just are so important. And I went and I joined the, it's like a African-American male group, and they talk, bring in entrepreneurs and they help you. Like I met Magic Johnson a few years ago because of that group.
Okay, cool.
And it was just eye-opening how having online presence is good, but also having an in real life presence is amazing as well. So that's what school taught me. Cause I watch Gary Vee and I watch all those YouTube motivational people. And they would always tell me they would always say, college is networking. Get meet valuable people and network with them and just try to just become genuine friends with them, and they'll help you in the long run. And that's what I did.
That's so interesting. Yeah, I definitely didn't have that perspective when I went to college. It just it wasn't for me. It was just like something that I had to accomplish. It was like a like a dungeon that you had to build, beat the boss or something like that, get the subscription right or get the certificate. That's interesting. Because you said you were in an African American male club.
Yeah,
but was the community college also an HBCU?
No, it wasn't, but it was basically functioning like one because we're in South Carolina, North Carolina, Atlanta, like everything surrounded. So they're basically they tried to do their best to have different groups for different like minorities to just give people a place to connect with their like the same kind, like understand, just talk about everything. So like they did really, really well.
Relate with you. So was there a gaming presence at the community college?
So yes and no. It was, everybody plays video games, but something that I wanted to do still currently is once my business gets to a specific point, me and my sponsors have been talking about this, I want to go into the school and donate some type of equipment. I know that there's a dude who runs community. It's like does gaming with colleges and stuff. So I definitely want to get to a point where I can reach out to him and like put some money up and be like, let's go put some computers or put some gaming PCs, some monitors into their into an area, and let's see how we can get it rolling, because they have shown interest in esports. And before I switched to straight content creator, I was going to lead their esport program. But I was just like, I want to be the person that for the next, the next generation, because I have a lot of stuff that I'm doing actively. So competing is kind of falling on the back burner of it. So, yeah.
Yeah. And so now where you're at, you talked about sponsors. We talked about your YouTube a little bit. Are you starting to work with other people on growing the brand? Are you working with other marketers, other graphic designers, other people to increase the distribution and engagement on your brand?
Yeah. So when I met my sponsor, he has in-house GFX artists. He has
a
marketer, because his son plays professional baseball. He's a minor league pitcher. He plays for he was trying out to play for the San Francisco Giants. And he has marketers. We have meetings every 2 times a month. And we're definitely in a motion right now, especially around this time. I love this time for business. So marketing wise, pumping out my YouTube videos, just getting people familiar with who I am. So when I do roll out everything with Arsenal, it'll be people will understand it.
Absolutely. So where are we at now? We're at your content creator. Are you still pursuing building a team to play in challengers, or where are you at with professional Call of Duty?
So I had to make a really hard decision this year. When Call of Duty switched to PC, and just how the challengers is being supported, it's a growing thing. It's very new. So for me, I decided to step away from it because I think what I can do just solely as a competitor or solely as just like a business person or in a content creator will impact Call of Duty later, like later down the line. And it'll just introduce people. So right now, my main objective is to just build my brand, put everything into my brand. And then later on, if we want to talk about a team but I honestly, my main thing, I want to see more competitive players do content. That's every time I talk to someone who's still competing, I'm like, yo, you are a brand. Even it doesn't matter if you're small. It doesn't matter if you're not the best. Please create something, because when you go to an organization, yes, they can invest into your skill. But if you go into them and you have a fan base, even if it's a small fan base, you are bringing value that gives you leverage. I know you had Premier on the podcast, and
yes,
I used to play for Premier, I think 2 years ago, and I love the way that organization is ran. And something that I wish that I had then was more leverage, because it would have helped me be on the organization longer. But the way Call of Duty is a lot of kids, they're still young, they're still trying to understand the esports like road. And Call of Duty esports is very different from other esports that I've paid attention to. So it's basically like you makeshift, you build your way up on your, like, there's no set formula that you can build your way. So that's my main thing, like create content. If you're a competitive player, create content, man. Invest into your editing, because it's all about quality of practice. You can become a pro without grinding crazy hours in Call of Duty, because it's a very simple game. It's about learning the core fundamentals. Like, you will be able to understand it, the mind of it. It's being smart. It's honestly just being smart.
Very interesting. Yeah. You know, we kind of gone now, you know, I'm looking back at the conversation mm-hmm. that we're having, like I the structure is coming to be very interesting. It's from, you know, when you're young, and you want to even get into esports, mm-hmm. maybe taking that amateur route, you know, of building a team. And if you can build your team, and then a bigger organization starts to work with you, I don't want that to happen. Then you then go to a challengers, and you present yourself, and then potentially get drafted into a large organization, mm-hmm. into like pro Call of Duty. And there are all these different routes that you can go, right? And so 100%. It comes to the conversation around professional esports being that are esports that, you know, content creation, not every player has that, you know, at the front of their mind.
Yeah, 100%.
They think
skill.
I want to be the best. Yeah, I want to be the best skills, mm-hmm. And the bragging rights of being a professional on a professional team. When the content creation is what showcases the skill,
it brings the eyes, man.
The team, right? Yeah. So what? How should? I mean, you took it from the approach from Twitter back when you mm-hmm. started. Do you still see that as the avenue to success, or is there like, do you need to do TikTok first, or like where do you need to come at the come at it from first?
It's crazy because like me and my manager just talked with my YouTube channel, because it's still relatively small, but I have a lot of bigger YouTuber like presence around me that give me a lot of information and help. But shorts, so like shorts for on YouTube right now, the TikTok version of YouTube. So being able to get a 15-second clip of you doing some crazy junk, or your communication, figuring out whatever you bring as a competitor. So there might be people like when I played, I was more of the in-game leader, smarts, just trying to make sure communication was on point. I would obviously do good in the kill death ratio and stuff, but I was just wanting to be the best teammate I could be. And if I had the resources to maximize that, like record it and chop it up and edit it and then put it on a TikTok or a YouTube video of being like, this is what makes me great. Like, this makes me like a good teammate. Just broadcast it. I think as players, I look at all the pro players and they're good at one specific thing and they just maximize it. It's just like being at business. If you're good at something, do like put all your eggs into that. Oh, I'm sorry, I hit the mic stand. But yeah, I think if you're a competitor, get on TikTok, get on YouTube, start a Twitch stream. You can stream it before scrims and record your scrims so you can then go make videos. Just be proactive. Wake up and I know the grind because I had a part-time job. I was working at a factory. It was a grind. So I had to schedule out like, okay, we're going to scrim this time. I want to make YouTube videos though. So let me get up a little bit early and do this. So it's just like, you got to be proactive because it's a niche. The niche is getting crazy. Like it's a lot of people wanting to be a professional player. Especially when it comes to COD, like there's a lot of people looking up to Skump and looking up to Optic and looking up to Hunted T and FaZe, and they're grinding. So I think content is the way to get you over that percentage of players. Because when, like for me, I was in like the top 32, cuff, and content being able to expose yourself would put you over that T24, then it took you over that T16 because you're exposed to it. So yeah, man, content is everything.
Yeah, amazing. So you mentioned there, I think something that we should probably highlight a little bit. Are you now a full-time content creator?
So I'm transitioning. So right now, unfortunately, I went through some stuff with my stepdad passing away a few months back.
My condolences.
That's all good. Thank you. I appreciate it. But I went and worked a little bit to help my mom, and now we're going full throttle with the content stuff. So yeah, I'm going to be doing full content creation, just diving deep into it. I got some funds, so I'm investing it into myself, getting my LLCs and all that good stuff. So yeah, we're starting to run.
So during the initial period of building the brand, you mentioned you worked in a factory. Mm-hmm. What was it? What did it take? How did you schedule the time to content create around the other work that you knew was building towards your actual passion?
Yeah, so it was a very tough decision to get to start my job because I was making money on tournaments, but it wasn't consistent money. It was just like you win $500 here, you might win $1,000 here. You win a couple of tournaments, but. When I got my job, I just talked to my teammates and was like, I had to look for teammates that had similar schedules as mine, was very open because on Saturdays you play like the cups and you play like the 2Ks and the stuff that gives you pro points and stuff. So you need those to move up. And I just would try my best to schedule everything. And luckily it worked out. Like I would just get up. Oh, and you basically because you scrim through Monday and Friday, like Monday through Fridays, you play on that Saturday. You might take a break on that Sunday and then you do it again. So I would just get at 6 o'clock, I would get off and I would just grind from 6 to maybe like 3 in the morning, get up. Like I would go to work with maybe 2-3 hours of sleep and just like crank it out, bro. I was a grinder when I was younger.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so, yeah, it must have been hard to work a full-time job, play in tournaments, and then also content create on top of that. So how were – when you started to, I don't know. You said you're still working a little still, and then now you're transitioning to full-time content creation. But how – were you – did you have a way that you, like, negotiated to get your schedule fit so that you could, like, have less hours so maybe you could fit in more tournament play or more content creation?
Yeah, so it was kind of weird because I like I said, everything, my whole life has kind of been set around gaming and esports. So when I would go to the job, I would be like, okay, yeah, I'm only available to be played, like to work this amount of hours or to work this amount of hours. And I still had school. So, but they didn't know I was doing online classes. So I would just, hey, like I gotta make sure I do my work and stuff. So they'd be like, okay, well, we'll come in early and we'll let you get off earlier so you can go. And I would like, just do that and crank it out, man. So it got to a point where it's kind of weird because around this time where this is where things in Call of Duty get very seriously. Like this is where the tournaments, like before like COVID and stuff, this is where the tournaments would get rolled out. So around this time I would always quit. And this year, like right now, I'm I work at BMW, the manufacturing company.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
So it's very, it's a very great job. But I had a meeting last week and this is going to be like officially my last month there. Like I'm going to be done with it and I'm going to full time and just go full throttle with everything. Because I feel like I know that there's a place for me in the industry. There's a niche that I could fill. I could help a lot of people. Yeah. So, yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, that's the one thing that I think that a lot of people who are maybe have like a social anxiety, not when they present themselves to like a potential opportunity, whether it be like, you know, doing something different to fund their dream or doing something, you know, with their dream where like they're trying to negotiate sponsorship, some sort of partnership, some sort of deal, like they don't put enough of the negotiation in. Yeah. On their own, they don't negotiate or you know, try to deal for themselves. They're like, whatever the opportunity placed in front of me, I'm signing on the dotted line.
Yeah.
So you mentioned music earlier, that esports is a lot like music.
Yeah.
You know, that's the issue with a lot of music artists too, is they sign those deals, they take the advance, but they don't remember or they don't know, they don't have the, you know, they don't have the mentors around them or people around them to tell them, hey, if you take that advance, you have to pay that advance
you have to
back.
Yeah,
you have to. You know, that's a loan.
Yeah.
You know, and some of these labels, that it's like the advance is actually some homie's credit card.
Yeah.
You know, that's like got an interest rate of like 25%. And on the contract, you got to pay back the, you know, the principal plus interest plus interest. The management fee.
Yeah. You know? So, you're getting hit with underlying things you don't even know about. Like, why am I paying this person?
Yeah. And especially if you're, you're young individual with, you know, not a lot of, mentors around you or anything like that, or like, role models mostly, you know, even I've found, you know, fallen into some of these traps with working for certain companies and things like that to be like, oh, I probably shouldn't have paid more attention. Yeah. I shouldn't have done it. Or like, I should have paid more attention to like, what is this opportunity really offering me? You know, and what does the other party get out of that as well? Like, what 100%. Am I going to be under delivering on this, or is it going to, you know, or I'm not going to receive like my due for the work that I put into it.
100%.
So yeah, like the esports industry from my perspective, outside of like, you hear about your fee, Tfue contracts and whatnot, but that exists that at that level, it still exists at like the amateur level as well, 100%. Because a lot of players, like, for instance, you're a player who might get signed. They look at your Twitter following, they look at your YouTube following, and like there's a lot of value with you. For the players that don't have that online presence, that there's not like a marketing aspect to it, you know, they are signing kind of crazy.
Yeah, they're signing crazy things.
They're signing crazy things because the team, well, they don't know if they can recoup from the money that they invest and whatnot. But yeah, I've seen some things happen to young guys, and for those young guys who are listening to the podcast, connect with Arsenal,
and
see if he can give you some advice. But yeah, as we close shop on this podcast, I'm gonna give you an opportunity to promote your handles and anything that you've got going on in order for the listeners to get involved.
I appreciate it, man. So you guys can follow me on Instagram and Twitter at @OneArsenal_. My YouTube channel is Arsenal, ARSNL. And something that's upcoming, coming up with my own podcast as well. So I might want to have you on there talking about your thing. Cause I love what you're doing, man. And I appreciate you for reaching out to me. Honestly, it was amazing. I was hyped. So that's it. Like, it's just, I appreciate it, man. I wish everybody the best. Hope everybody grinds, man. I just love esports growing. I just love it. I love it, man.
Yeah, man, you're super inspirational hearing your story. You know, I'm sure a lot of people who maybe have like wondered, like, what are the up and comers doing? What are the people who are established that are built a little bit of a brand are doing? Like, there's so many different questions about it as regards to like the people who are on the you know, the back office side, mm-hmm. to the people who are in experiential marketing and, yeah. and different things, to see like what's actually going on. And so like that's the value I think that you've brought to this podcast. But once again, this has been Corey Arsenal Booker. Welcome everyone to join the Facebook group and the other things and whatnot. But thank you very much for listening.
Hey, y'all, it's Trent Knox, founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. I want to say thank you for listening to this podcast. If you're finding value in the podcast, I would greatly appreciate it if you share the podcast to your network and write a positive review on your preferred podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, feel free to make a contribution to our working capital accounts on Cash App or PayPal. Our username is ESPORTSBIZNET. That's Esports BizNet on both platforms. As always, we'd love for you to join our community and platform at https://www.ebn.gg. You can take advantage of a free subscription to our bronze membership by following the directions on the homepage. Part of the bronze membership is access to our Discord server and private membership channels. The conversation only evolves with participation from esports entrepreneurs like yourself. We need to hear about your esports business to understand how we can move the industry forward as a community. You can also join the community by joining the Facebook and LinkedIn groups. An additional goal of EBN is to move the conversation forward on your preferred social media platform. So as a last note, don't forget to follow us on social media for current events, news, and other esports related topics. Follow and subscribe to Esports Business Network on social media. Looking forward to networking with you very soon.